from stpetecatalyst.com.
We are in the Catalyst studio with my mayor and candidate, Wengay Newt Newton. It's good to see you, sir.
Good to be here, Joe.
How's life on the campaign trail?
Life is beautiful. My knee is almost about 90%. You get that from knocking doors and talking to voters in this hot heat. But I love it. We're getting great response on the doors. And before I forget, I want to send a shout out to the class of 2021. You know, my daughter graduated last year from FIU and had to be virtual. She had to stand next to a 70-inch TV and hear her name read and, you know, dance in front of a monitor. But I'm elated because I see these young people. I just drove by the trap. I see a lot of them in cap and gown. So they're starting to have in-person graduation. So I want to thank and congratulate all the seniors for graduating and onto your next venture in your life, and also the college students who are graduating. I pray you come back to your beautiful city and help us move forward. But everything's going good. Other than that, it's been good. Had a great Memorial Day. We spent time again knocking on doors talking to voters. So it's all about the voters now.
Oh, yeah. And thanks for the segue. You talked about graduation and education. That is today's topic. And we're looking for three things you'd like to see added to the curriculum or enhanced in the curriculum that aren't there now.
Oh, well, mine first and foremost would be educating young people on the school-to-prison pipeline and how they play a pivotal role in that, some of them not even knowing that that's going on. And what I mean by that is when your children return home from the first day of school, they got a stack of papers that they bring home, and you as a parent have to sign those papers. But then there's a document called a code of conduct, which is a discipline for the entire school system. However, when you send that back, you have situations like if, say, a young black kid gets in a fight in a school in South St. Pete, he gets a ride to juvie jail. But if we get a white kid in an affluent, say, Palm Harbor High School, and he gets in a fight, he gets a detention. When a fight is a fight, it's a fight. But now this young African-American has a juvenile arrest record, which means no military, no student aid, and no jobs because they got background now. Also, the other young man who got a detention, the reason he got a detention is because he's going to Harvard. And at Harvard, you know, you can't get in Harvard with an arrest record. So what happens more times than not, the implicit bias that they inflict enforcing these rules is what endangers these kids. So the kids should be educated to that's going on so they can conduct themselves accordingly. Sometimes it's beyond their control. But last year, we arrested 54,772 5 to 17-year-olds. And 67% of those were African American. So those juveniles are getting caught up in the school to prison pipeline. And the way they fund it, because people often say it's the legislature from which I came, but it's not. It's these implicit bias school policies. Last year, Pinellas County, I think they committed the juvenile commitment programs or adjudicated as adult 272 kids. So if you take, and that means those kids are out of the school system per their policy. So if you take 272 times 7,800, that's $2.1 million that they gave away. What I mean by that is that the statute says, and I quote, once a juvenile is committed to a juvenile commitment program, then the general fund is to transfer the money from the last school district in which that child attended into the Department of Juvenile Justice. So that money follows the kid. So now that kid is committed to the juvenile program, you have money paying for that. So that came from the school and it's going to a correction facility or a juvenile facility. And currently we have $88.6 million in our Department of Juvenile Justice for juvenile jail beds. And those are juveniles, a lot of that come from these schools. So ultimately, the young people need to know where they play into this picture and what traps they have set for them. And I would love for them to be educated to that fact, Joe.
Heard. And, you know, understanding the discrepancies in the schools that you mentioned, if we looked at the specific curriculum, right? So if they were actually going to have this conversation with the students, first they would outline, you know, what the potential consequences are, you know, and really showing them what the code or what the code of conduct says and what the potential consequences are. What additional information do you think would be useful to pair with those facts?
Well, additional information would be to also educate the parents of that fact. Because what happens is the parent has signed that document. That's a contract between the parent and the school system for their child and how he'll be handled as it pertains to discipline in that school system. So I don't think the parents even know. What I just told you and what people looking and hearing from me, It's probably the first time you ever heard this. And they always argue about they're taking the money away from schools. If you take $2.1 million, which is what it costs to put those kids out of there, divided by 47.5, that's the minimum teacher pay in Florida, which brought us the fifth in the nation for starting teacher pay. You could employ 44 more teachers and staffing. But what's happening is because these kids don't know, because these parents don't know, they're getting caught up in the system and they're getting arrested, you know, and they're getting sent to a juvenile facility and now they have a permanent juvenile record that's going to impede them the rest of their lives. And it doesn't do any good because now it's going to be subsidies and you got to pay for affordable housing, you got to pay to help them because they can't gain gainful employment. They can't be a participant and realize the American dream.
Let's move on to another.
The second one, I would like to say, is financial literacy. Financial literacy is key. These young people need to understand how a dollar works. They need to understand credit. They just don't have a financial relationship with a bank. They need to understand how to be responsible in that realm, too, with credit scores and stuff like that. And I think a lot of the young people don't realize that. And by the time they get out of school and going to college, then, you know, when you get to these college campuses, they bombard them with free credit cards, you know, they give them all kind of credit cards because the college is getting a cut of that money from that credit card company. And the young people are getting it thinking it's free money and they're buying pizza, they're doing Uber, they're having stuff delivered, they're having the time of their life. But now they got credit debt, they got student loan debt, and they're being, you know, suppressed with debt. So that also prevents them from getting some jobs because some jobs do run your credit. And also, it will hurt them when they try to go out and participate in the world because they got so much debt. So if they understand the financial literacy, that's going to help huge. That's big.
Yeah. And this is sort of where I was going with the follow-up to your first one, which is, once you have the information, right? So you have the information about what the policy is, you have the information about what your budget is or how finance works and how credit works and interest rates. And do you think that beyond that, there's an additional sort of psychological education so people know what to do with the information, you know, understanding, how buy now, pay later, even though it's very tempting, that may be something to understand how that works.
Yes, I think we have programs. I have a company I'm partnering with that does financial literacy. They do free financial literacy, and it's called inclusive financial literacy for everybody, low-income and middle-income people and businesses, to try to show them how that relationship will impede them in their future. Because if they don't have access to the financial portion and be able to get credit and be able to borrow money, it's going to be very difficult for them to realize the American dream. So getting them access to financial literacy, you know, empowering them in financial literacy will empower them in life and they'll be able to live, you know, and participate in the American dream. This program is set up to help them with that also. I know they touch a little bit on that, probably with business, math, or whatever in schools, but it's not a requirement. When I was in the legislature, we tried to make that a one-credit course that you would do, but everybody screamed because they're going to knock something else out. But if you know some of these young people, they get out, and they got these buy-here, pay-here car dealerships. I'm not picking on them, but those kids can go in there with any kind of credit and get a car. Well, the car payments are they're relatively low, but the interest is like credit card interest. They'll never pay that car off. And if anything ever happened, they get in an accident for verbatim, and the car's total. Now they owe debt on a car for the value of a car from that loan that the car wasn't even worth. It's called like gap insurance. So that's messing them up too. So they don't think about that as young people. They think about, I got a new car or a nice new car, new to me, and you know I got cheap payments. I pay $150 a week, which basically is $600 a month. But they don't see it that way because they're young, they're having fun, and they have not been educated to the fact. Normally, when they get older in life, they do start to listen and learn and know about investing and the value of a dollar and how to start a business and all that. But all that comes from being financial literacy. I think it cost us $418 billion last year because it cost the U.S. because most of the population was financially illiterate, which means they didn't know. You pay higher insurance rate. You pay higher interest rates. You pay higher mortgage rates. You pay more for the same thing that your neighbor with good credit and good financial education enjoy just because you don't know. And that's the illiterate part.
That makes a lot of sense. All right. What's your third item?
My third item is home ownership. Home ownership, equity, and generational wealth. You hear this slogan that every candidate is going to throw around about affordable housing. And affordable housing, you know, I once asked a late council member, I won't mention his name, he's deceased, but I want to thank him for his education. When I was running for council in 07, I had a legal pad. I went and interviewed each council member to get their perspective on certain items that were important to the community because I'm inspired to do what they're doing. And he shared with me, I said, what's your take on affordable housing? And he told me, he said, you want to know my take on affordable housing? He said, let me close my door. I was in his office at City Hall. And he said, my take on affordable housing, if you make the money, then you can afford the D house, you know. And I was like, wow, you know. But he was right. He was right. It's all about affordability. And the problem with it is salaries and wages are not going up in the same rate as your mortgages and your rent. If you're paying $1,000 to $2,000 a month in rent, you're paying a mortgage. It's just not yours. So back to where we started with the financial literacy, you have the money. I mean, you got the money because you're paying the rent. But we got to get you credit worthy to be able to get a mortgage, have a relationship with a bank to be able to do that. I have a company that'll look at your credit, and they'll assist you in buying a house. In essence, they'll go get a mortgage for you and do a rent-to-own option. And you go out and find the house that you want. You live in the house. You pay what you were already paying and a little bit more. You're paying rent, but you pay a little bit more toward a closing date somewhere in the future. And then you'll be able to own that house while you're living in a brand new house. And if 10 years into the future, you don't want to close, you get to take all that money you paid over that bottom rent part, and you get to take all that equity and walk away with it. Right now, if you did that, you have a handful of rent receipts. So you participate in the American dream, you build equity, and you can own it. You can potentially own it. The toughest part for African Americans is getting mortgages. You need a mortgage. You got to be able to qualify for a mortgage to buy a house. And that imposes a barrier. So the financial literacy part is huge. You know, I love Habitat. We spoke about that earlier. Habitat for Humanity has zero interest mortgages. They're creating affordable home ownership, equity, and generational wealth is what I support. You know, so just throwing this phrase around about affordable housing, you know, if you got the money, you can live on the 14th floor or the top floor in one of these towers behind me. That's affordable to you if you got that kind of money. So it's all relative if you ask me. And it's just a catchy slogan. Yeah, everybody got to support affordable housing. They've been saying that for years, and we still have a crisis as it pertains to people to be able to have housing. And the reason I'm looking at affordable home ownership is because your mortgage payment will stay the same. If your wages go down, your wages go up, you'll still have the same payment. See what I'm saying? So you'll be able to live. Now, I support $15 an hour, but if I get $15 an hour, my landlord knows I got $15 an hour. So my rent goes up, and my financial situation is still the same. I'm still struggling. But when you own it, you got stability in your monthly rent payments. You're also building equity and generational wealth. So if ever you want to go down there and start a business, or if you want to buy a car, if you got significant equity, all the bank is going to say, what color you want, you know, stuff like that. We'll give you a letter of credit to be able to go get it. That's all ties back to the financial literacy and, you know, and being a church boy. It's like what the Bible says, train up a child, not a black child, not a white child, but train up a child in the way he should go. And when he's older, he won't falter from it. We have to train them up. And it's all about training. And the courses that I'm telling you about in education is training them up in the process so they can participate and realize the American dream. And that's what I'm all about.
So when we look at the economics of a developer coming into town and saying, we're going to build a tower, that makes more economic sense for them to build higher priced units so they can make a bigger profit. What's not factored into that equation is, if there's too many of those, then the folks that need to work in the businesses downtown and you know, be in the restaurants and in the shops aren't going to have a place to live. You know, but that unfortunately isn't factored into all those equations. So, you know, when you look at the mayor's role in setting up the city's relationship with developers through the code and through policy, You know, you mentioned financial literacy as being a big one. At least people understand what their options are and what their highest and best use is. But if the properties aren't there, even that literacy isn't going to help. So what other things do you think are under the purview of the mayor to help balance the availability of that kind of housing?
Well, it's to be able to be proactive instead of being reactive. What happened in Midtown South St. Pete, where I was born and raised, the most impoverished area in all of Pinellas County, and it's been that way for the last 20 years, the last two decades, is that there was no responsible or development. There was no plan, in that area. So what you had was people coming in, gentrifying the whole area. So the people that could afford to live in that area, now they can't stay there. And I don't fault the developers. I mean, they're trying to build and make a profit. No one goes and builds a tower to take a loss. It doesn't work that way. You know what I'm saying? So I understand that. But if you had a plan as mayor in place of where you could do this and what you would do, as far as if you're going to, for instance, when I was on council, we had this company off of Gandy that wanted to take out a mobile home park. And they were saying these things are blight and we're helping the city and blah, blah, blah. And I get it. The mobile home park, they paid no abalone tax. They just paid a tangible tax. So they don't contribute. But they get fired. They get police. They get all the services. However, you're displacing all those people to put up a high-rise and property, highest and best use for that piece of land you got brought, because you can for your property rights. However, there's nothing for them. There's no affordability for them. You just got rid of what they could afford. So we're pushing people out. So unless you get in front of that and say, hey, if we do this, then we have to account for that. Even if you can't, you don't want to put them in your expensive condo, your expensive tower, provide funds so we can help them become financial literate and get a house somewhere else. But I'm telling you, what's happening down there is just really too late. It's hard for anybody to get a house down there. You know what I mean? It's because the prices are there, but they call it free market. But you see what has happened without having the guidance of a mayor to construct and control that. You know, everybody want to do a plan. They want to do a plan now, but it's too late. That's like closing the gate after the cows have gotten out. The best time for affordable housing plan was 20 years ago. And in those areas, you should have saw that coming. What we did on count, what I didn't do, what council did, they alleviated a lot of the requirements that were made. Like if you got a lot from the county down there and you wanted council to waive the taxes, they waived the taxes, but you had to build something that was affordable. Well, a lot of that went away. All that stuff, it was members on the council that profited from that got rid of those requirements, okay? And now they're getting no fees and impacts wiped away, and they're not providing for that affordability because they're there to make a buck. And like I said, I get it, but there was no leadership in that area, if you ask me. We should have had a plan for those areas and saw this coming. And, you know, even now we have an 86-acre trop site, and that's has a $1 billion of development potential. If there's not a plan set for what happened before will happen again, with the promise of jobs and economic impact and wealth, the people down there were displaced. That was our Black Wall Street. That's where all the businesses were, the grocery stores, and all that stuff got wiped away with an interstate and a trop. And those promises of jobs and equity and stuff, that never materialized, you know? It did for the people that's occupying that space, but not the people that were displaced. So we have got to make sure up front that that's going to be in there. And the way you do it is really simple, Joe. If they don't want to build it, you make them put funds in an account set aside so you can provide for that as mayor. And what you don't do, you don't take all of your money and put it in one project. For instance, we had a project that started out at $25 million, and then it was $40 million up under the second mayor, and the third mayor spent $85 million ultimately completing that project. And that took away all your resources so you can provide for affordable housing, and that kind of stuff goes on. But you need that leadership. You also need relationships and partnerships like I have with the legislature to be able to try to go get some of that money and those resources to help to that end. But it's important that we provide for that, because if we don't, I mean, it's going to put more people on the streets, and then you got a homeless problem.
Thank you.
Thank you, Joe.
The information, I appreciate you.
Yes.
Candidate Newton, on my mayor. We'll see you again in a couple weeks.
All right.
All right.
From stpcatalyst.com.